In our agenda today, we are going to be discussing with the representatives of the House of Traditional Leadership in the Republic of South Africa issues pertaining to development in all the villages in this country. So we will not include the small towns. It will just be villages where our traditional leadership is responsible for. Then after discussing that particular matter, we will release our traditional leadership so that as a committee we can go into our approach to tourism development oversight work and then discuss our second term draft committee program approach, the minutes, and then close the meeting. All things being equal, those who do law call it ceteris paribus, all things being equal, we should be done by 12:30. Yeah, in this meeting. Half past one. Khosi Siatolo, Murulung Wahait, Rahwamukhela, Riamukhetimula is our Hori. Kwena o tla emela modula setulo wa bosetšhaba wa ntlo ya dikgosi godimatlhango. Jaanong ne kere ke go amogele semmuso jaaka modula setulo wa komiti ya bojanala. Re itumetse tota gore wa bo o tseile matsapa a makana-kana go tla ka kwano mo letsatsing la gompieno o patilwe ke ntate Sethola ke sa fose. Re a go amogela. I was simply saying to the representative from the House, Chief Siatolo, that we are welcoming him and we thank him for taking pains and making time to come and interact today here with the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. Khosi ya rona Khosi Siatlolo is from the Northwest Province, Bokone Bophirima. Part of the leadership of traditional leadership for the Barolong is Khosi Siatlolo. That is why you heard me talking to him in our language, which is Setswana, so that we can understand each other better, but also just show respect. In this committee, Khosi Siatlolo, on the extreme left there, extreme left, we have Honorable De Freitas. Honorable De Freitas comes from Gauteng province. He represents in this committee the Democratic Alliance. And next to him there is the president of the AIC, Wasema Tatie, Honorable Kalo. Honorable Kalo, I've already said, represents the AIC. I think we are the only committee that has, no, I'm not the only one, that has got a president. So we are one of the blessed that has got a president. Next to him is Honorable Mieni. Honorable Mieni is from the African National Congress, from the province of KZN. And next to him is Honorable Sitor, ISP. Nate Mieni is ANC. Nate Sitor is ISP. he comes from Gauteng. Yeah, he comes from Gauteng. He's a member of this committee, Ubaba Sithole. We have seen, I'm sure you have seen in the media, they are doing something very good there themselves, and the ANC, they are talking reconciliation. Something very good for the country. So we applaud them for that. Next to Honorable Sithole is Honorable, we call Gumba Gumba. Honorable Gumba. Lene Gauteng. She's from the African National Congress. Next to her is Honorable Peter. Honorable Peter, that's why best tetamu Mhlaba wakhe. He's from the ANC, from the Eastern Cape, Honorable Peter. And the next Honorable Peter we have here, Honorable Shelly Mashele Makubele. She comes from a province of the National Chair of the House, Mpumalanga. She's from Nelspruit. She's from the African National Congress, Honorable Makubela. Next, Honorable Makubela, we have Honorable Gumbi. That one is Gumba, this one is Gumbi. Honorable Gumbi is from KwaZulu-Natal. He represents here in this committee the Democratic Alliance. Otherwise, you know me. The chairman of the committee. That is SOR Mangumapelo. I'm from the African National Congress. But here I'm in here in my capacity as the chair of this committee of tourism. The rest of the people we have here are the committee administrative staff. But we also have representatives in this meeting from the Department of Tourism. And maybe I must allow themselves to introduce themselves so that tomorrow I'm not accused of being co-opted by the executive because we do oversight on them. So they will do the introductions, and then when they are done, I will request that Ntate Sithole will then introduce you formally. Yes. Over to you, Department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, Dr. Babu Matelo. Give him a disabled checkamonsoon. Committee members, my name is Jeremiah Matlala from National Department of Tourism in Pretoria. Representing the department as an observer in today's committee session. Thank you.
Dumela Sobona. I'm Pietro van Niekerk. I'm from the Department of Tourism. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members, and everyone. Bitolaka Kilewang Shabalan, Chief of Staff, Minister.
All right. That is all.
Chairperson, thank you. As you have indicated, my name is Abraham Sithole. I'm the Secretary to the National House of Traditional Leaders. The chairperson of the National House is unfortunately unable to attend today's meeting. He therefore requested that the member of the relevant committee to attend on behalf of the National House and on behalf of the Institution of Traditional Leadership before this committee. Therefore, he requested Kosisi Atulo to represent the Institution of Traditional Leadership in this committee. The chairperson conveys his apology to the committee and the chairperson, but believe that Kosisi Atulo, as a very capable traditional leader, will be able to take the committee through the processes of tourism. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Thanks very much, Ndadeskog. Kosisi Atulo, we once more want to reiterate that we are very grateful and thankful of the dignity that you are bringing to this committee by coming to come and interact with us. Basically, today we are going to be brainstorming, interacting, and forging a relationship as a committee on matters that pertain to the economy, but with specific focus on tourism. In as far as we are concerned, this committee has come to the conclusion that poverty in this country is very highly prevalent in the villages. I don't want to say rural areas, but I know people like saying rural areas. But you know, rural is also includes farms, and some of the farms are commercial, highly advanced. Some of the farms are game farms, highly commercial, owned and controlled by the white South Africans, who through legislation of the former government of apartheid were given an advantage over black people in general and Africans in particular. So when we talk rural doesn't give you the exact clear picture. But when we say village, we know, and you would know better the situation in the villages. So because we are building a South Africa which going forward will not discriminate against anybody, a South Africa that will not see people based on their gender, a South Africa that is prosperous, that is united, a South Africa that the rest of the world will envy. It's important for us also to look at our history, because our history must inform the current things we want to do to change the past. So we use the present to change the past, so that changes of the present can inform the type of future we want to build. So part of our history in South Africa here is traditional leadership. Before the arrival of white people in this country, South Africa was in total control of Africans under the governorship of their traditional leaders. Various areas throughout the country. That is how the situation was before 1652. Now, over time, when white people arrived in South Africa, things began to change. And all of us, we know what has happened. Displacement of black people, of Africans. Others were maimed. Others were killed. Others were displaced. Others removed from positions. Other traditional leaders were replaced by people who were just created to become a traditional leader because they were cooperating with the system of apartheid and so on. And then from a development perspective, the villages slowly became peripherized in as far as development is concerned. Then there was the creation of cities. It was called modernization. So this modernity was brought about through legislation here in Parliament, you will remember it's sort of tricameral parliament which excluded black people. Then cities sprang up. And during the fight between white people, that is the English and the Afrikaners, as if they were going through out of Africa, when they conquer a place, they will name it after themselves. Then emerged the small door piece. When you look at the most of the small door pieces in South Africa, they are named after, some of them were generals who were leading on either side, whether the English or the Afrikaners. That's why you've got a small door piece throughout South Africa. Now, this small door piece, because development had to happen, what then happened is the former government started building infrastructure in the form of roads, telecommunication, railway lines, because for agricultural produce, they started building silos and so on. And many other things that happened there, including golf courses. All the small door pieces have got golf courses in South Africa. So the small door pieces were then established and became a sort of slightly advanced small towns at the expense of villages. Now, because this development that had to happen in South Africa required labor, some people who were supposed to then work. Townships were then created as labor reserves to bring black people all over. So they got displaced, brought into the township. So it was not just for labor. Others were removed from their areas in order to take the land. Right? So there's Section 21 going on now throughout the country, I'm sure you're aware, to try and address that problem of people who were removed from their land and so on, in order to create some of the small door pieces and some of the big cities that were named after certain individuals, like Pretoria is named after Pretorius. And the rest of the other towns and cities that we have in the country. So in the course of that, villagers are left behind. Fast forward 26 years in democracy. Statistics South Africa, when you look at their research, it will tell you that poverty, inequality, and unemployment is highly, highly prevalent, stubborn, and dominant in the villages. And we have our people residing in those particular villages. They are under the governance of traditional leadership. Because of democratic dispensation, there's also councillors there who are running the wards and so on. That's why there's ex officio status of traditional leadership in the councils. So as this committee, when we came together last year, we said the National Development Plan says we must deal with the triple challenges of poverty, of inequality, of unemployment. We looked at research, as I have said, and research said to us the three are highly prevalent in the following sequence. They are very highly prevalent in the villages, followed by the townships. That's why I earlier said townships were created as labor reserves for the development of these cities and the development of the small towns for the benefit of white people at the expense of black people who were now in those particular villages. So as this committee, we then said, what is it that we must do as tourism? Tourism has got a huge potential to create jobs, to create entrepreneurs, to create infrastructure, to create next to infrastructure will be ICT infrastructure. For tourism to go well, you need roads. you require telecommunication that is efficient. Today we are talking about fourth industrial revolution. We can't talk about fourth industrial revolution and not talk about how that is going to find expression in every village. Right? Most of the people who talk fourth industrial revolution, they talk cities. So we need to see how does it find expression in a village. The villages will require medical facilities that are of world-class standards. They will require accommodation, be they hotels, be they lodges, be they B&Bs, be they private homestays, and so on. They will require transportation. They will require safety. They will require supply of everything that we consume as people in the villages and our tourists who come to the villages. So they will need all those particular things. The schools and so on. That's the villages. That is why, from a development perspective, COCTA was supposed to make sure that every ward in this country has got a plan that says what is supposed to be done in the immediate, short term, medium term, long term, and adopted through the councils in the area. And then we will be able to see whether tourism is accommodated as a possibility and a pillar to drive the economy in the villages. So where we are now, as a committee, we are very sure, and we talk about it without any fear of contradiction, that the villages have been getting a raw deal, even after democracy, from a tourism perspective. There's no major developments that are tourism-driven in the villages. The townships are better. People are beginning to have B&Bs in the townships. There are some lodges that are emerging. It's not as impressive, but it's not that. Now, what does this mean? In government, there are packages to help people with funding. It's grants, it's all forms of funding. If in the villages we don't have these types of establishments to promote tourism in the villages, it means the funding is skewed. It means the funding is cockeyed. It means the funding benefits those who are in the big cities, those who are in the cities and in the small dorpies, and to a lesser extent, those who are in the townships for township tourism and so on. And these people who are in the villages, they also contribute to tax. Fire tax, they contribute to the fiscus. But where does their fiscus go in as far as tourism funding is concerned? That money goes to the cities. It doesn't come back to them to help them. If you sell your cattle in a village, you are going to be taxed. If you sell anything in a village or you buy anything or you work, you are taxed. So, why is that tax that is coming in the form of grants for tourism and many other funding facilities that are there not assist the same taxpayers? They just happen to be located in a village, right? They are South Africans. They've got all the rights that are in the Bill of Rights. So the committee thought that we must start a revolution. And this revolution is tourism revolution in as far as development of economies of villages through tourism is concerned. The chair of the National House was so excited in our meeting last year, and he said the traditional leadership is going to give this committee names of all villages in this country. We are asking for the names of all the villages from yourselves, Khosisa Tolo, because no office in this country has got names of villages in government. They don't have. State SA, is only interested in counting people, individuals. SASSA is not concerned about the number of villages we have in South Africa and how do people live there and so on. So we know where we are sitting, that information we can get from the House of Traditional Leaders, and so on. So what we would want to do after getting that information is then to push government, working with the House of Traditional Leaders, push government to make sure that tourism does happen in the villages. I don't want to say rural areas, in the villages. You are from the northwest. You would know that from Johannesburg up to Mafikeng, huge tracts of land there where you see mealie fields is owned by white people. And that's rural areas. That's why I don't want to use the word rural. Because if we talk rural development and you look at the amount of money that's come from those mealie fields, from the maize meal, peanuts, from production of sunflower oil through sunflower, and so on and so on, and all the crops that are produced and we consume them, black people don't control those businesses, but it's rural economy. That's why I use the word village and not rural. So after getting the names of these villages, our intention is that we must, through the Samwerk Samtrek philosophy of working together, ka Setswana ra re bobedi bo bolaya noga. Yes, bobedi bo bolaya noga. What it means, honorable members, is that when we work together we can achieve more than if we work singularly. So with the partnership between the Tourism Department and the House of Traditional Leaders, having received the names of all these villages, we will then zoom into every village and look at the extent of poverty, inequality, and unemployment for every village. We will then say, to improve the situation in every village, this is what we think tourism must play. Now, this is part of transformation. That's why I call it a revolution in tourism. I will give you an example. Majority of us here know that we used to say mud houses. Mud houses. Right? And majority of us, me and you, would know to maintain a mud house, some of the ingredients you had to use to maintain it will be cow dung. White cow dung. Right? Me and you know that very well. Now, we have a structure here in government called the Grading Council, the Tourism Grading Council. We called them one day and we asked them, if there is a mud house in Mahikeng and tourists from Britain come, and we say to them, go and visit the mud house, you are going to find cow dung there that is wet, they may take you to the crawl and explain you to you the relationship between the ancestors themselves as the living and the crawl, right? They will explain to you the relationship between themselves and the cattle. That's why they even give cattle names. That's why I give Khomo Modimo Nkwe Metsi, wona yona wa tlhoka boroko, wa tlhoka wa tlhoka boroko, right? So they will explain all those things. They will explain to you the need to preserve the environment. Because you as traditional leaders, you are very responsible for environment. We would know which trees are not supposed to be cut, which grass must be taken care of, which flowers and so on in a village. Now, we say to the grading council, what grade do you give to that house, which is a mud house, with cow dung for maintenance, to cook? You must cook outside using cow dung again that is dry, or you use wood, right? And when you go to people of labor, they will tell you from health and labor perspective, actually it makes the consumers vulnerable. It's not good for their health to cook in that environment. Right? And therefore, they don't qualify to eat the food that is cooked in that fashion. So there's no grading for that villager who will want the British who visit to come and into a village and have a feeling of what, how does it feel to sleep in a mud house, thatch roofed, using cow dung to prepare food, to warm the water, using cow dung for maintenance, and the smell from the cow dung. Those from health will tell you it's not good for the tourists. When we know that that is not true. Now, after 26 years, there's no grading for those people who would want those establishments to be visited. It means they're excluded from the economy of tourism. So when you Google and you look for those places and the grading, because the tourists, when they come from Australia or America, they look at the grading council, the number of stars given to an establishment. It means you will not find a Mahohoi village person who has a mud house with cackle at the corner there with an opportunity to bring tourists to that village. These are the things that we want to discuss with the House of Traditional Leaders and make sure that we work together to change the status quo, because the problem is that we've got people who are, I call them status quoists. It means they are very comfortable with convention. Right? They don't want to deconventionalize because convention creates comfort. And when we're in the comfort of convention, it affects your thinking. When other people raise issues about that situation, you think they are mad. You say, but why are they raising? I don't see any problem. Yeah, right? In government, when you would know, because we used to work together, if the executive, Petro Mola, is to go to a village, and you say to them, for them to eat, catering might have to be done, who will just slaughter chickens there, five of them, cocks, five of them, slaughter them, there and there, quick, boil them, cow dung, fire, black pot, and then cater for the minister and the entourage. You are likely to be told that that cannot happen. Because the caterer must bring Ben Maris, right? Must bring Ben Maris because Ben Maris is shiny. And the caterer must bring all these urban things to that rural, no, not rural, to that village setup. So the person cannot qualify. Because the cocks that have been slaughtered may become a health risk to the minister and the head of departments. And the mayors do the same, right? They will get sick. But when there is a funeral, they are the first ones to be in the queue when we come back from the graveyard. First in the queue. And we are told these are VIPs, right? They are brought forward in the queue for them to eat the food that is cooked, black pots and with wood and so on, and they eat there. When they go to the office, now, Monday, in the office, now they think differently. They think differently. They've even forgotten that they were in a village, in the funeral. So these are the things that we'll have to attend to, the stereotypes, right, that are there, which were brought by so-called modernity. So we'll have to deconventionalize, move from convention to deconvention, so that we change the status quo. Now, we don't want to do it alone as a committee, because it's a tool. We want to do that with yourselves. Cultural precincts in the villages are a tourist attraction. And who are the custodians of culture in this country? They're the traditional leaders. It's not government, it's not universities, it's nobody else, it's yourself, the traditional. You are the custodians of culture in this country. You know, some years ago I made a proposal, this I'm just saying in passing, that if I was a traditional leader, I would have mobilized the traditional leaders that actually the state must have four branches. Must have the executive, the legislature, the judiciary, and traditional leadership. Because I grew up in a village, I know why there must be four branches of the state. So that future generations must not inherit in South Africa, where the role of traditional leadership has been evaporated. Because before white people came to this country, the governance system in this country, it was traditional leadership. Yes, it was traditional leadership. So Europeanization of South Africa then led to them being pushed to the periphery. And today we don't even want to, they are ex-officio. In everything they are just ex-officio. Right? Perpetual ex-officio members. When actually they are the core, you are the core of the existence of humanity in this country. So that argument, I made it some 8 years ago, and I lost that debate in my organization. But I'm saying, we can't push to the periphery the role of traditional leaders. That is why in this committee we would want the traditional leaders to work with us, to use tourism to advance entrepreneurship in every village, job creation, deal with unemployment, and deal with infrastructure development in the villages. Because, as I said, for us to have tourism doing well in every village in this country, we must have the necessary infrastructure. So that the people who drive to the villages must not the next time complain about the state of roads. They must not, when they are there, complain about water. They must not complain about sanitation. They must not complain about access to internet, right, to Wi-Fi. They must not complain about those. If there is an emergency and we need an ambulance to come, a tourist affected by something and so on, an ambulance must come quickly. So we must be able to communicate quickly. The ambulance must be able to drive on the road. That is okay, and the ambulance must be able to take the tourist to a facility in a village that is world class from a health perspective. So we would want the traditional leadership to work with us to promote tourism. Our kings and queens and traditional leaders who have passed on, the graveyards and the history behind the role they played in those villages are a product for tourism. They are a product for tourism. You know, I said to this committee one day, before there were watches, Africans were using the sun and the moon and the stars to study the environment and to say, this is what we think is the time. You would know that in Setswana, the first star that comes out in the afternoon, around 6 o'clock, that star, the first star that comes up, I don't know in Zulu and Xhosa what you call it, in Setswana it's Kopadilalelo. No, it can't be Mphatlalatsa. Yeah. No. Yeah. Mpathala than is in the morning.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Naledi Amis.
Naledi Amis.
In East Coast.
Which one? It comes out.
No, the one, just when the sun sets, there's a first star that comes out in the south. The first one that comes out. In Setswana is Kopadilalelo. Now, when you look at that star and you look at the watch, it's around 6 o'clock. Now, Kopadilalelo dilalelo is food. So it's dinner time. But there were people who were using the stars, right? Now, what stops us from bringing the tourists from Australia to your village? And the elders in the village must be able to relate the story of that star to the tourists in real terms. And they must sit there and wait for the star and look at it sitting around the fire, right, as part of storytelling. That's tourism, right? And you can't do that in a city in Zante. No, you can't do that in Zante. That you might do sitting next to the crawl in a village. Now, in the early hours of the morning, that's where we come to this Mpathalazano of yours, Gumba Gumba, Naledi Amis. Right? The idiom, Mahube Anakatahu, the horns of the car, at the distance when you walk towards the crawl, the only thing you can see in the crawl are the horns of the cattle. Then the Tswana people said, Ke mahube anaka sa kong. Right? That time is in the early hours of the morning. So we should be able to relate the story to the tourists. Is it there in our program in government? No, Aiko. Doesn't exist. Right? It's not there. So we'll then have to say, how do we use all this rich history? Now, the history of every traditional leader, where they come from, where they originate, the food, the language, the culture, that we must explain to tourists, to build tourism in the villages. And then that's how we're going to make sure that we build tourism in the villages. So, our request as this committee is you as the custodians of culture, the African culture, in the villages to work with us formally, to deal with poverty, inequality and unemployment, and to change the status quo in as far as tourism is concerned. We are not saying the villages must be city-sized. They must be modernized to become like a city. No. Villages as they are, we must just make sure that all these other amenities that people need. Who says in a village you can't have a swimming pool? Who said so? Do we have a program in government to build a swimming pool in every village? No, it's not there. Right? It's not there. That doesn't exist. In the townships, you will find a little bit of swimming pools and so on. Now, if we bring school children again to Bitidusilejwang, the village, and one of the things they will want to do later there as life's part of life skills is swimming, it means they can't swim, these young people, in the Matatiel village president. They can't swim. I have said in this committee, I don't understand why, for instance, the Department of Education working with tourism, working with traditional leaders, we can't have a program that takes all school kids, all of them, it must be compulsory, every quarter to visit one village or another. And when they arrive there, they must find elders in a village who must tell them the history, the food, everything about that particular village. And the food they must eat there is that the cow must be slaughtered. They must see how it's slaughtered. They must be told about different parts of the cow and what they mean in the African culture. Thereafter, they must enjoy the meat. and other young people in the village must come and do the dancing. Then there is story territory, right? In a village. And you don't need any infrastructure. That thing can happen under the tree. It means if we agree that it happens as government, it can happen next month. The bus must just arrive. And when the bus arrives with these cool kids, they're going to find Banabako Khai. You will have brought them there who know traditional dance. They are going to find poets who are from that village. They are going to find storytellers who are in the village. They are going to find experts who knows how to slaughter a goat, a sheep, a cow, and explain the story to them. They will find indigenous food like the dito and so on, right? Indigenous food so that they can taste the food. They must be told about the traditional schools, why there must be traditional schools as part of our value system. But the buses are not arriving. Where are the buses going? Cape Town, Durban, Durban Beach, Port Elizabeth, East London, Sun City, right? And then the game reserves. That's why they are going to find animals, wild animals that were taken from you. I heard nobody brought buffaloes and springboks. Exactly. So they were taken from Africans, and then reserves were created. And then they must go and watch them, the lions and so on. Now, these kids are not going to the villages. So we want to work with you as part of radicalization to change the approach. We would want black people, Africans, through the leadership of the traditional leaders working with government to create an alternative tourism market. Yes, there must be transformation. White people must work with black people, wara wara, to push tourism in villages, but it has not happened after 26 years. It hasn't happened. So some of them are refusing. So what you do, you must create a parallel system of village tourism. That is what will force those who control the economy of tourism in this country. We would want the Khosi tsa rona as part of entrepreneurship to speak to our people as entrepreneurs, to do supply to the existing establishment, hotels and lodges and so on. For instance, Khosi tsa rona, which one can we take? I don't want to take Northwest. Let's take Kruger National Park. Supply of everything that is used, that is consumed there. It doesn't come from villagers. If we were to give one entrepreneur per village a room, one room, and we say to them, the carpet, it's you, the tile, it's you, the bed, it's you, the bedding, is you, the curtains, is you, the decor, is you, the freshening up, is you, the cleaning up of the room, is you, the pillows, is you, everything else in that room. And we count the number of rooms in South Africa. I don't know how many there are, rooms in South Africa, all the hotels and the lodges. We can create entrepreneurs in a month. But those entrepreneurs must be villagers, so that they can have money, right? It means they go to Protea, and when Protea says we want 500 pillows, you have a villager who just supplies pillows. You must have a villager who does the carpets, who does the lighting, and so on and so on. It's, unemployment will be a thing of the past. We can do it in a month. And then we are done. We just take all these unemployed people and say, we're not wali pillow, we're not wali nene, we're not wali carpet. But it's per room. It means everybody will be getting something. Chapel said. Everybody will be getting something. Yesterday I was discussing with the HOD of education. I said to him, I want you to give me the total number of schools in this country. Mr. Mwili. Right? He says, well, he still calls me Premier. So he says, Premier, what are you, why do you want that information? And I said to him, no, I want to use it. And then I said to him, give me the total number of classrooms. So he gives me the numbers. And he says, the schools in South Africa are 27,000. 27,000. So I say to him, we can have 27,000 entrepreneurs, minimum. Those who are not in business at all, we start afresh and we say, why giving you, doctor, this school here? It's your business. You are an entrepreneur from today. And I say to him, let's take it further. Let's go to classes. How many classes are there in the country? He says, it's 338,460. Right? 338,000 classes, classrooms. And I say to him, this is 338 entrepreneurs. 338,000. He says, why? I say, no. It's because each one of them were giving him a class or her, a class. Now, what do you do in a class? The desk is you. Right? This new type of a board, which is ICT for learning, is you. The books for that class is you. If it's iPads, the tablets for that class is you. The uniform for that class, right? From shoes and socks and everything, it's you. For that class. There is also, I need to see our kids get food from government, school nutrition program. It means you make them a consortium, class by class, each one of them just feeds those 30 or 40 that is in that class. Now it's 40 plates per day. For that particular, you can do the calculations, do that. On your phone. If per plate it's 40 rand times 40, 40 times 40, it's 1,006 times 5 times 4, okay, per month, 32,000. Just on the foot, right? We have not just spoken about the board and the desks and the books and the uniform. Just on the food is 32,000 to somebody who was unemployed. Class by class throughout the country. Unemployment is gone. People are celebrating. Everybody's happy. But the model we have chosen is a wrong model. Because what do? We give 50 schools to one person. Right? Then that person has got small trucks that are delivering all over. You know why? Because we like monopolies. We like monopolies. So where I'm sitting as part of supranomics, this that I'm saying is supranomics philosophy. We can deal with unemployment and take a person who has not gone to school in a village. And when I host, you give us those people. And the people are given classroom by classroom. So you can go on your own, honorable members, and do the calculations. Or if you add uniform per child, just 40 per class. If you add the desks, right? If you add a tablet per child, and so on. If you add the fact that that child has to be transported to school, right? And all other things. Go and calculate how much that entrepreneur is going to make per class. It means in a month, South Africa can be a country of entrepreneurs. We don't end there, Jose. We now go to manufacturing and say, who produces these things? All of them. The uniform. I think these ones are just buying and supplying. We now go to manufacture. That is industrialization. For a villager. That's now industrialization. And we go to the supply of diesel for all these buses and say, who supplies? And as government, we make a decision. We say, the supplier of diesel for this bus is going to be Mr. Mtimku for 1 year. Next year, it's Mr. Mugwei. So you are empowering a different person, right? Next year is Mr. Mduli. The people are sharing the cake. You don't give an evergreen contract like they do at SAA to one person who supplied fuel, jet fuel. And who said that person can be a villager from Matatiel? He doesn't need a degree. He doesn't need a truck that will collect the fuel and deliver it at the airport. He doesn't need a degree. That person will have experts who will manage the books, who will be the CEO, who will be the auditors, who will be his or her lawyers. He doesn't have to be a lawyer. That's supranomics for you, right? Now, and my conviction is that the villager, remember we're dealing with poverty, where poverty is, right? Must be the one who does those things. We don't need new money. The money is there. It's only that is given to individuals through monopolies. We don't need new money. The primary school, the school nutrition program is there. The money is there. It's not. We don't need new money. You must just take the money and divide it amongst the class by class, classroom by classroom. You are done. So, Khosisatholo, this committee, tourism, all these things that I'm saying, right? We just want to focus on, from a tourism perspective, what is it that we can do to help the villager? How proud will a villager be if Springbok Atlas can next week say, the supplier of diesel for Springbok Atlas is from Matatiel. So what makes Springbok Atlas not to say, Khosi in Matatiel, Ubaba's told, was a case that Besito sneak a band. Right? But province by province or area by area, lay area, e diesel yabo will be supplied by Ubaba's told. And because akuna PFMA lapo semnika yona akuna bid committee supply chain warawa sithatha le decision as in management yes Springbok at last good is in we are giving it to Baba Store. Baba Store, we know you don't have money to start, so we will make sure that from the start we supply for free, so your first stock for free, the second up to the fifth, and then from the sixth one, you can start paying us. And you know, how now you're learning about the collateral? Who knows about the collateral? You're so bad. How now? Are you relative here with collateral? It's not your son. It's not your daughter. No one about the collateral. So, why is Springbok Atlas not asking that this toilet to supply diesel? Why? why is Protea Hotel not saying to Mokwena, we want you to supply amaqanda, eggs. Every day we require so many eggs, huh? That is all, that mean we want to every day, please bring us so many eggs. And this is where you will get the eggs. They tell you, this is where you will get the eggs. And every day your duty is just to take your bike and deliver the eggs. And on that day they must pay you. So every day they transfer. I'm going to call it technology. Service technology, transfer, eggs delivered, whatever. They must not say they'll pay you a month end. After when we sleep there, we pay everything. They will never give you a key without, a room key without pay. Right? And why can't Protea say, Mr. De Freitas, we want cabbages. Your job is just to bring cabbages. Why can't Protea say, when your job is just to bring a sugar, when it's oil, huh? When it's rice, when it's millimeal. Why? Because they've got monopolies who are supplying. Protea will have one contractor who does the supply for all Proteas in SADC. And when you want to talk to them, they say, no, go and speak to the main supplier. Maybe you can subcontract. Whatever. We don't want to be a subcontractor. You want to give them the eggs tomorrow. Right? So we need to change the system. But we must just start somewhere. So where we are going to start is a village. The villagers will have to rise. They will have to stand up and say, no. We want to give Sun City the eggs from Mema Mokwena. Wako tataganyani. We must do that. Right? And we must help our people. Those were the opening remarks by the chair. I'm very passionate about village economic development. Because I have not studied poverty. I've lived poverty. Right? I've gone to school without shoes, barefooted, 8 kilometers every day. My mother was a domestic worker, so I don't need to go to UNISA to study the impacts of poverty. And it's not only me. I mean, we are many. In the rural, and it was designed by men. It was designed by people. This poverty is a designed poverty. Yes. Yes. There are people who sat here in Parliament and decided that they are going to make us poor. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, and they passed a law.
Exactly.
Yes, we said, you black people must become poor. What law do we pass? And they passed the law.
Keep them under poverty line.
Yes, it's not God. It's they decided that we, the black people, must be poor. And the problem with Stasis is that when they talk poverty, they just talk percentage. They don't talk race, color, and localize it and say where is poverty prevalent. I don't think are interested in consumer price index. They are not interested in that. The rating agencies. If you go to Matatiele now and say, I want to to understand about rating Moody's, rating agencies. Person, yeah, Tina's from Gouda. Tina's from Umsa. No Moody's as much. What do we want is food. Funumse is. Hey, Peter. Who's allowed CPIX? Consumer Price Index. What you know, not consumer price, you pay it and so on, we must do this and that and that. They are going to chase you away. Yes. What they want to know, what are they eating this afternoon? and who is getting a new job tomorrow. So don't tell them out there about consumer price index, the environment of economy stagnating and whatever. They are not interested in that. So we want to start these things from a tourism perspective. I don't know if we have our wheel. Well, our people in graphic design have done the wheel. We have requested people in parliament here, the bicycle wheel, which has got the spokes. Each spike there represents a department. Right? Now, the SF, where the chain goes in, there, the bicycle, represents tourism. So each spike there is a department. So we are showing how all these departments must work with tourism, which is the ASL, your chain, your bicycle, in order to propel the bicycle. The bicycle is the South African economy. The driver of that bicycle is President Ramaphosa. He's on the bicycle. So we don't want the bicycle to wobble and he falls. It means the spikes must be strong, right? At the center of those spikes, driving the economy there, according to the perspective of this community, is tourism. So we show there how justice, police, environment, culture, they are related to tourism. That without them, tourism can't move. That's why in your village, for other developments to happen, in order for tourism to exist, they have to work together. We can't do tourism in a village without the departments of sports, arts, and culture. Can't. We need them to be there. So, it's for the first time I speak for so long since coming to this parliament in a committee, they know. It's because I become emotional when I think about how we don't want to change things. And things are so easy and simple to change. That's why I made an example of every classroom. That is an opportunity for entrepreneurship. You know, Ntate Motsoaledi, 2 years ago I sat him down and I said to him, when I was still the premier, Ntate Motsoaledi, the goods and services in health, everything that we consume in the health sector, is 32,000 consumables. From syringe up to cotton wool. And I said to Ntate Motsoaledi, Mr. Minister, do you know that these 32 things represent 32 opportunities for entrepreneurship? 32,000. They represent 32,000 potential factories to manufacture these things. Right? Why are you not changing? Why are you not doing it? Why can't you create these factories? If we don't have the means, why can't we go to these countries that are producing these things and import the skills, right? And build village-based industries. There must be a village that only produces syringes. People must go to work every day for our own consumption. But it can happen because of Aspen. You know the company called Aspen? It's an American company. It is a monopoly. It's an international, global, monopolistic company. It must produce that for the rest of the world. Right? We must just consume. So we can't produce a syringe. We can't produce a condom. Now, who are the consumers, for instance, of this antiretrovirus? It's Africans, throughout the African continent. But are we producing one tablet. Take three times with water. None. It's from Europe. Can we produce the tablets? Yes. Do we have the trees, the indigenous trees to... for science to work on and produce the tablets, yes, we've got the trees, the flowers, we've got them. Yeah. That's why we need the land. Because the land is where these things must be planted before we can have the tablets for consumption. The land. That's why we need the... It's not only for maize and potatoes and cabbage and so on. It's also for tourism. Yes. So, I was just saying, Kosi, Honorable Members, you'll bear with me. I went a bit overboard on this supranomics thing. But I just wish God one day, the Almighty, with all his powers, he can just appeal to authorities that be to think differently. As I say, we've got the money. Therefore, we must have entrepreneurs, but we can't have entrepreneurs because, you see, this water, it's not from Parliament. We put the label of Parliament, right? But somebody has brought this water here. I can tell you, if it's a black person, I bet it will be a miracle. Right? And you find that this person who brings the water here in Parliament, I get China, we just suppose a man, you know what I mean? We don't ask, who brought this water to Parliament? How long is that contract? Now, you just need a borehole. Now, people in villages have got boreholes, so we can say to each one of them, what you need there is just a filter. That's all. In the borehole, just insert a filter. Then it's still water. So why can't Mr. Kumbi from Gugulethu, from KZN, bring us the water? Right? For 5 years. And next year, it's Mr. Nkadime. So we tell you in advance, for 5 years, there's no manga business. When are you will deliver the water for 5 years? Next year, it's Mr. Nkadime or Mrs. Nkadime. Why can't we do that? So, yeah, big problem. Coca-Cola is a multinational company delivering water. Metsira filwe ke modimo. Amanzi. Amanzi a kankulungu. There's nobody who has a machine that makes water. Or who made a machine. Wakwenza amanzi. Akekho muntu. Unkulunkulu wakreate umhlaba, not wakafama, wakreate umhlaba, not lo mhlaba and everything else that is there. Wasinika amanzi, and what did other human beings do? Hayi, ba privatize la manzi. So siyathenga ma, we pay for the water, and God gave us the water. And we sit here and we pass those laws. We have just passed a law through the agriculture here. I was angry but keeping quiet there in Parliament when we were passing a law that gave the people in the Karoo an opportunity for them to own the intellectual property for Karoo lamp. Right? Lamp. As we speak, we passed that law. It's people in the Karoo. So it means people from your village can't produce meat, supply meat from lamb that is has a stem from the Karoo. Because when you go to the Karoo, there's Karoo Lamb Production Forum there, membership and wara. You can't join if you are not from the Karoo. Go and look at who is staying in the Karoo. When I ask them, why do you do this? They say it's because the sheep here, they eat special types of shrubs. And the shrubs, they produce a certain quality of meat. from goats and sheep, and therefore if you are from Limpopo, it means you can't produce the same. So it means exclusively until eternity, it will just be Karoo people. But we passed it here. Honorable members. So we passed that law here. I'm now going to give you an opportunity. After you have spoken, honorable members will be given an opportunity to say their say. But basically what we are looking for from the House of Traditional Leaders is not many things. One is the total number of these villages and the names of these villages. The chair has already agreed to that, so I'm sure we'll get that. Village by village. We'll do the rest thereafter, the population, the demographics, everything. That's one. Two, we will need cooperation from the traditional leaders to help us establish tourism forums, village by village, so that we can help our people to become entrepreneurs in tourism. So the third thing we would want is continuous communication, and that these meetings that happen between us and the House of Traditional Leaders to evaluate our progress must be annually. So every year let's meet and assess progress once a year. In between we'll use internet and other things to liaise. And maybe what we should do if we agree to meet annually, because every year you have got the opening of the house, like last week. Maybe it should be a day or two before the opening of the house, because the opening of the house is standard, so that you don't make too many trips to and fro from Cape Town. You come for us, we see tourism, and the next day you go to the opening of the house. What we are going to do every September, tourism month, we're starting this year, we are going to tell South Africa and the world about problems of transformation and progress in tourism. Tourism. Transformation. Tourism is refusing to transform.
Yeah.
So from this year in September, we'll be telling the world the extent to which we are transforming the tourism industry, because Springbok at last doesn't want to give Mr. Mkulu the opportunity to supply dessert. So we're going to name all these things item by item and talk about them from a tourism transformation perspective. So in September we'll tell our people how many hotels are there, how many rooms are there, and if we're to give every room to one villager, how many entrepreneurs we are going to create and break the monopolies that are there throughout the country. Yeah. So over to you now, Khosi. Morolo.
Kya leboga modula stilo. Tona kholo le rona re santsane re le mohela. Greetings everyone. We are happy to be here, and we thank the chairperson for an elaborate presentation or a discussion. We are not selfish. We actually invite, before I forget, we invited the chairperson to come to the house and speak to all of us about the supranomics economy. Yes, we would like that to happen, so that all 23 members of the House can get to hear this, and it must be in the system. We are from the Northwest, so I'm quite familiar and in agreement with what he's saying. My CEO, I'm with my CEO here. He will come in later. We are here to interact, not necessarily to, to make a presentation. We just had a few pointers to give shape and so forth. He will come to that later. I'm just going to be also giving a broad overview of what we think should be happening. We are the National House of Traditional Leaders. We represent 836 traditional councils across the country. Collectively with our communities, we own millions of hectares across the country. And it's in counting, because we are also engaged as various communities across the country, engaged in restitution processes. And also due to the fact that Section 25 of the Constitution is, I hope, it's going to be amended soon. We hope to have more land as Africans, that it be restored back to us. And part of the restitution process is where these beautiful places are, which historically belonged to us. We will get into that a bit later. Chairperson, I just wanted to add in that example that you made with regards to using cosmology to talk about time, and it's not just stars, even chickens. Every hour, if you look at time, the rooster would tell you that an hour has gone by. So if we bring tourists to the village, we would have the tourist there with his watch. Don't look at your watch. We would first tell you about the star, and you look at the star. We explain what that star means, why is it there at that time, what is the story behind that star. And after that star appears, the rooster would be more likely also telling you that an hour has gone by. Then the European or the tourist can now look at the time. Then it will be precise. So we will not be telling folk tales. We will be telling you real things that are happening in real time. Chairperson and the committee, we are happy that Parliament is speaking the language of Africans. Sometimes we sit and wonder that we have 400 members in Parliament who are predominantly black, but when they speak, it's like they do not even come from our villages. You know, the laws they pass, the economic outlook, we sit and wonder, do these people really come from us? Or maybe it's because when they get there, they now become important people and they don't think like us anymore. And so we are happy to hear Parliament talking the language of African people. Not to shy away from who we are as black people, to be able to... You see, this is why our people lack self-confidence, because when you are in Parliament or you are watching it, they are not talking about who you are. You look at tourism, it's the same thing. So we are happy to have members of Parliament who represent who we are. That is precisely why we voted you to be here. And also from an economic perspective, majority parties who are here, including the ruling party, are mostly voted in by rural people. But when you look at the decision of the budget, it's not going back to those people who put them in Parliament. They are taking the budget elsewhere. And you wonder, why do we keep voting these people if they are taking the budget elsewhere? They are taking the budget to the cities. You know, every time in rural areas, in villages, they are talking about no budget, no budget, no budget. Maybe we must look at other parties who can prioritize us when it comes to budgets and departmental planning and so forth. All we get every month is grants, 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 grants. and families are fighting for those grants. Now, from a tourism perspective, villages are an almost an untapped market, a huge market that can be explored by us together with our government, because as traditional leaders, we have consistently committed to working with the government to develop our people. Now we need to take a look at that untapped market. Most probably where you can find tourism in rural areas or in villages, it's in the coastal area. But also there's a very little of it. There's what the former president Zuma called the oceans economy. I think during his era he introduced the oceans economy. There's a lot of villages that are along the coastal area. I would like to start there. There's a lot of villages that are along the coastal area, but they're just as poor as us in the inland. And but there are people who are living adjacent to them, and they actually own that economy. And you wonder why the same is not done to our African people. There's a lot of communities in the Eastern Cape that are living, across or along the coastal line. Those villages are not necessarily used as a niche market for tourists who are coming in to see the natural rendezvous, not those ones that are designed by other people. Yes, the organic rendezvous. We are not tapping into that and many other things that are happening in those villages, telling their stories, their history, and so forth. So we would like to go into that space and see if we cannot do something there to help those communities. The ships are there, they can see everything, but they are not participants in that economy. So if we, as one of the things we can collaborate on, we can look at that ocean's economy from a tourism perspective, that we can get into it. But also, you know, in the inland, there's a lot of things that we have as people from the inland. I'm talking the Northern Cape, Limpopo, Northwest, and so forth, where you do not have seas and oceans. That is the inland. There's a lot of historical sites. You hardly hear about the Taung Skull, you know, where the origin of mankind is. You know, you hardly hear about that. So those are some of the issues that we need to... mainly because they are in a rural setting or in villages. If that Taung Skull was somewhere in the city, in these metropolitan areas, tourists would be flocking there. So we totally agree on the issue of monopoly, because the people who are in charge of the industry, they don't even look at us. That is why if we were to partner or to take this thing of collaborating seriously, you would not just help in tourism or entrepreneurial aspect, but you would be helping our people to start having confidence in themselves in terms of who they are and so forth. Because now other people would start taking them seriously. That's why they want to leave the village as soon as possible, because there's nothing of value there. So we need to look into that. As the National House, we are working on a concept called Invest Rural. We spoke to the president to say there's these investment conferences and whatnot, but as usual, we are being left behind as rural people. So, CEO, from where I'm sitting, tourism could be a catalyst in terms of this Invest Rural concept. Because the portfolio committee, I hope in, well, I know because we have already met the deputy minister of the department. We can start working on a strategy to see if the tourism aspect cannot be a catalyst in the investor-rural setup that we are working on. We are trying to package all business opportunities, all tourism sites, existing and potential tourism sites within our villages, package them into a tourism product, and then start marketing them and selling them to would-be potential tourists. But because of the monopoly each of the industry, I know we are going to be facing challenges. But when we are with you, we would be able to do something there. The issue of organic food has become the new thing now in the country. You know, you even see in Woolworths they are selling goat milk at a very premium price.
Yeah.
But we've got a lot of goats in our villages. We can readily every day produce that milk to various shops, your Checkers in Woolworths and so forth, to these lodges and hotels. And, you know, as part of storytelling all our history, from an indigenous knowledge perspective, we have always known that, and used, in fact, the goat's milk for children and for their health aspect. We have always known that. But because it was us talking, no one listened. But now I think someone spoke and told these people that, no, this thing is very nutritious, it can heal, and it has so many healing aspects to it. Now people, our very same people are buying it in, you know, they're flocking to these high premium shops. So there's various opportunities that we can collaborate on, and particularly the indigenous knowledge systems. Sometimes they call it recognition of prior learning when you go to university. It's not that we do not know. We have always known. You have always had philosophers. It's not a new thing. It's not only the Platos and those guys, the Constantine and whosoever. We are working on indigenous knowledge systems. We were in a discussion with the University of Johannesburg with the students from the architecture department. And one of the things we spoke to them about is that, you know, when you go to Russia, from the buildings themselves, to the cup, to the teaspoon, you can tell that you are in Russia. When you go to England, you can see the cathedral and all of those things. You can see that, no, here you are in the Queensland. But here in South Africa, the modern houses that we are building, everything looks European. What happened to our indigenous architecture? Because we also evolved. It's not that if Europeans would not have came here, we would still be wearing those things. We would have evolved, but naturally. So even our way of building houses, remember before the rondavels, we were using just grass and other materials. And eventually we evolved up until to the point of building rondavels. So obviously we could have been building some form of a house now. But now our architecture is just informed by European thinking. And what is the point of bringing those people here to come and see Cape Town? Because it's the same as where they are coming from, except for the Table Mountains and the natural settings that are not there. But otherwise, the buildings, the architecture, the food, everything is the same. So those are some of the aspects of collaboration that we could work on as traditional leaders across the country and the department and the committee here in Parliament. From a practical perspective, Chairperson, We are engaged in a restitution process across the country. A lot of communities have claimed land, and I would speak from a personal experience on this one. Now, you find that between 1% and 30% of the land that is being returned back has tourism elements from it. You know, you would find lodges coming back to the community and all of those nice places. But it's only rural development there. There's no Department of Tourism. But those are were previously tourism or are still currently tourism generating entity. But the Department of Tourism is far from there. Once that has been restored to you as part of the settlement agreement, you would have to run to the department and say, "Department, here is a property I have. How can I, you help me?" It's the situation we are having as a tribe. We received a relatively small area there in the Royal Front area. A chairperson might know it. It's a tourism a farm. You know, there's hunting of antelopes and so forth, a couple of chalets. That it's a tourism area. But because the Department of Tourism is nowhere to be found, we have to, and because the Department of Tourism is not there, they did not buy the wild animals. And that area is designed for hunting and so forth. They just bought the property for 12 million and then the animals are not there. What is the point of having that place if you are not buying the animals? And this is why, you know, you get these negative stories that land is being given back to black people and they are misusing it. You know, it's almost what you call a hospital pass. You know, you are being given something that they know that would not work. So, and many communities, I know they're experiencing this when land is being returned, where there are tourism sites and so forth that are already functioning. Can the department ensure that it is part of that? Otherwise, that thing will collapse in a year or so. It's very important that when tourism entities are being given back to the community, the Department of Rural Development must only transfer, and from there on, the collaborative work must be between the Department of Tourism and the concerned community. Then we can be able to sustain those entities. Otherwise, we will keep having stories of they were given a 20 million property, it's messed up, it's what. It's because the department was not there. So our government is working in silos, and it's crippling the community. The potential that could be cultivated from there, it is not, because the department is nowhere to be found. It's not necessarily their fault, because the Department of Rural Development is ought to invite them to say, here is a site, we are handing it over, take it from here. So in terms of that, we would like to have the committee and the department, because it is here, engage the Department of Rural Development to say, if there is such a development, please come on board immediately to avoid a point whereby a place is devalued because you were not there. So broadly, we are happy to collaborate on various aspects of the tourism industry. I particularly like tourism because it's able to employ a lot of people in a very short period of time. If our lodge were to be operational, we would just start with 30 people or so. It's a lot of people. You know, you would start with 30 people. They would be hunting and all of that. So we would quickly deal with this, the three terrible twins of inequality, unemployment, and the other sister, yes. So it's very important that we immediately start working on this program, And I'm happy, Chairperson, that you want this to be on a continuous basis. We also want to have it on that way. The Department of Social Development, through the Office of the Deputy Minister, gave us that opportunity to work with her on her programs. And maybe you can just ask her how is the relationship, but more importantly, the impact on what she's doing. I'm sure she would be able to tell you that through working with traditional leaders, the department or government is able to access the most rural parts of the country. And she has been able to take us out from the periphery where we are just put there and almost forgotten. You know, these people will come back to us when it's almost election time, like next year. So if the committee can afford us that opportunity and the department can come on board, give us a chance, see what we can do, see how we can easily change lives of people. And more importantly, these jobs that are in the tourism industry, most of them do not need highly skilled people. So it's suitable for people because you just need to give them a basic skill and then they will start working and start producing. So we are happy to collaborate. I will give the CEO a chance to speak on some of the issues that I might have forgot to mention. But we are also happy to take clarity-seeking questions where maybe you might be confused or something that you might have an interest in. We are more than happy to take questions and give clarity on whatever that might be confusing a member. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and to the committee as well. I think Chairperson, unfortunately, or fortunately, fortunately, took everything that we wanted to say about rural development, about village economic empowerment. He really mentioned, he went really ahead of us on that. But Inkosi here has spoken a lot as well, but I just wanted to add one or two things. Khosi mentioned the Dawu's skull, and I want to add Kanzwana Tsatsi, which is one of the critical aspects that, if developed, it has a lot of potential. But again, Chair, you see, when we're talking of tourism, it does have a potential, not only of creating jobs, but to empower those villagers, to empower young people who are there. Because the biggest challenge that we're having now is our community is getting young every day. And being young, you are sitting at home, there's that potential of getting hooked into drugs and into something that are illegal. And therefore, e-tourism is one thing that can change that attitude and maybe create job employment. Heritage sites, there are so many. But as many as they are not developed. Even those that are at a developmental stage, they are not marketed. You will call, provincial government will come and speak there and promise, and nothing will happen at the end of the day. If I may just make a practical example, you have this place in Mpumalanga, they call it a Holwen. It is in the Limpopo province. It has been there since 1970, and it has been visited every year on the 19th of December since then. But you go there now, you check what is it that is there which can attract people to come and visit. There's basically nothing. It's only a statue that is there, and that's it. That's the end of it, and there's so much history about that community as to why they chose those caves, what was happening, and all of that. You go back to the history of 1883 and all of that. There's very little development, if any. On top of that, there are no tour guides to to take you and say, no, you see, this scroll here belong to a Skosana person. This is the importance of Skosana in this traditional leadership and all of that. Because there are different surnames within the communities that played a critical role in the traditional leadership. So that is very important. Chair, you have mentioned a little bit of cultural events. You talk about initiation. Almost all provinces, they have initiation in one way or another. And initiation is just not only initiation, but when these boys or girls come back from initiation, they are gifts. That is source of economic development. Who supplies that? Now, taking from the economic outline, yes. Who supply all those things, packaging them in that way? Who supplies those? For instance, the one that I'm much more familiar with, the Ndebele version of initiation. When a boy goes to initiation school, when he leaves home, there's a goat slaughtered. There are blankets required. There's food for 2 months. You know, in the middle of the initiation season, there's another goat to be slaughtered. When he comes back, there's a cow to be slaughtered. You know, there are blankets, there are gifts, all those things packaged properly. There's a lot of economic development that can take place, but that is not happening. So, Chair, you spoke about the history of communities. You take, for instance, close next to me, the history of Barulong. It's quite rich.
Yeah.
You go back about 1700. Here, what Barulong were one of the powerful communities in the Republic. But who can tell that history better than Barulong themselves? And who, when do they get the chance to pass that knowledge from the elders to the young generation? Elders these days, they, you know, when you are 45, you then recognize yourself as an elder, and Gahela, you are far from being an elder. Elders of today, much as they would want to pass the information from them to the young generation, there is no platform given for them to pass that information. So it's very important, Uti, as we start to engage on this, we create even that platform for the elders to pass the information. As you said, Chairperson, the visitation by schools to traditional councils, that will give an opportunity to elders to pass the information. You go to Limpopo, you find Musangwa, the boxing, the barefist boxing game. It's a very interesting one. But who else has ever visited that? And what? Why are they doing it? You see, getting the history behind that is very important and passing that message over. So, Chairperson, I think as the National House, we were aware of the request that you put forward, and the request was taken forward to provinces to start working on that. We're in the process of gathering that information, Chairperson, that you requested, because it's not only about knowing the villages, but it's even to put them on the Google Maps, as you said previously. When you click the village Pumula, then it will tell you this is Pumula located in this place and all of that. Then you can go straight to that place and get whatever that you want. So we're in the process of getting that. But what is important, Chairperson, here is, as Osi correctly said, we have started engaging with the Department of Tourism. But we're engaging at a very high level. So we need to move from high level to actual operational, as Osi is saying. Who left does not know what the right is doing. So if land is restituted and there's that potential of tourism attraction areas in that land, obviously, the department that is bringing the land back must inform the other department that has a role in that particular place, so that when you're coming in there, this department is saying, no, we're ready to help you with this. That one, we're ready to help you with this. DTI is coming in and saying, if you are able to produce this, this is what we'll do for you. All that chain, that packaging of what can benefit tourism and economic development is very critical. But Chair, just to end, I think the invitation by Kosi to the Chairperson is very important, that we hear this broad vision that the Chairperson of this committee has on economic development specifically for villagers. I think that will change a lot of thinking even from some members of the National House and some other traditional leaders, because some are having this thing that is a tourist attraction, but because they're so much used to it, they don't even see it as an important aspect that can draw in communities. So that message, I think, will change the attitude. And the other thing, Chair, is the attitude of the agencies. As you said, the bus does not go where it's supposed to go. The attitude of these people who are guiding Amama tourists, it's very critical, because they will not, even if you can have such a good place wherein you can have tourists, but they will not take them there, because either the road, the infrastructure is not good, or maybe they view the place as too far, and so on. So that is a very serious thing. Chair, as you said, Duoti, there's a need for even grading the facility to be engaged. It's very important that the tourism must meet the South African perspective of cultural and traditional life, so that we have that kind of our tourism approach as traditional communities. But Chairperson, will wait for you to come to the National House and present the because you are older than me, I will not call you by name, but your economic perspective, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO Mr. Stole. We'll now give members an opportunity. Honorable Freitas, anything?
Thanks, Chair. All I want to add is that I believe that throughout the country, we haven't used the opportunities that are available to us. If you talk to tourists from all over the world, this is the kind of stuff they want to see. They don't want to experience another Europe in South Africa. They want to see another city which they see anywhere else in the world. They want to go and experience something completely unique, uniquely South African. And we need to, Chair, as a committee, we need to push the provinces, we need to push the local authorities to take tourism seriously. And that's the problem. In my experience in discussing with other colleagues in other tiers of government, tourism is taken as a back burner, it's not taken seriously, and it's not understood the potential, the impact, the economic impact, the social impact that it has. And so in South Africa, it's not taken seriously. I can give you various examples worldwide where there are countries that survive solely on tourism, economically. And here we have it at our doorstep, available to us without much work and much effort, and we're not taking the opportunity. It's very frustrating. So I think we need to work with the local authorities, the traditional chiefs and everybody involved. We have the solution. It's just a matter of getting everybody to think in the same way and make sure that the infrastructure is there and make it happen. And my second point is that the existing infrastructure, stuff that has been built, part of our history that has been built already by past governments, whatever the case is, should be also renovated, so that it can also become parts of that same tourism that we're talking about. So, for example, old mining towns, for example, or examples of old battles that happened between indigenous people and the Boers, whatever the case is, those must be also re-enhanced, because that's also part of our history, and people are interested in that, and uniquely South African. So I think we're all on the same page. I think we need to now push it. I think we need to talk to the premiers. I'm sure you have the influence there, premiers of the provinces, and they need to just understand how easy and relatively inexpensive it is to get such a great return. Thank you.
Honorable Freitas, President.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, in your opening remarks, you indicated the fact that our indigenous leaders, I'm not comfortable with the traditional leaders, traditional medicine, so on and so forth. That is why I elected to call our leaders indigenous leaders.
Yeah.
You indicated the fact that our leaders were the first people to defend the land. That is number one. I'm not going, in the interest of time, to refer to the battles that were fought by the leaders, by our leaders.
Yeah.
You also indicated the fact that these are our leaders even before we introduced the Western institutions in this country. And I fail to understand, Honorable Chair, as to why, as black people in this parliament, we are undermining our traditional or indigenous leaders in this country. For instance, if you go to your Chapter 12 of the Constitution, the roles that are given to the traditional or indigenous leaders are tricky, Chair. Perhaps for this tourism revolution to succeed, this committee chair must assist in terms of ensuring that that Chapter 9 in the Constitution of the Republic is amended to give powers to the traditional traditional leaders or indigenous leaders to be given a clear responsibilities when it comes to the development of the rural areas under their jurisdiction. We can't have a situation where the traditional leaders or indigenous leaders are not being allocated money from the fiscals of this country. We can't allow that. Because if you talk of the development of the people in the rural areas, the poorest of the poor masses in this country, you can't live outside the indigenous institutions. Because we are sitting here, for instance, as members of parliament, but at the same time, we are the subjects of these indigenous people. But when we are here in parliament passing laws, we are undermining their intelligence. It can't be. I understand your comparative kind of politics. We want it to be like UK, USA, so on and so forth. That must be changed, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Zoran Fishan. I think, Chair, most of the things has been said through this portfolio committee. What we need to do, maybe as from today, we need to implement what we have suggested. If we can do that, I think most of the things can be addressed through this portfolio committee. I think the other thing is, the chairperson has said that the economic outlook of our country is not addressing the villages and the small towns. I think that is where we need to put more effort, but through this committee. The other thing is that invest rural. I think that is another thing which we need to consider, invest rurally. We need to look to it and we take it up also. Thank you very much, Chair.
So,
thank you, Chairperson. And the third one, first of all, there's something that I want to find out from the leadership of Amakosa. From this 836 traditional leadership, do they have any programs to find out and understand how many accession areas do they have in the advertising areas? And the other chairperson is do they have the program for capacity building to different areas? And what I want to find out is the relationship between the traditional leaders in different areas and the councillors, because there's some block that's happening in those categories. And the last one, Chairperson, is the kind of the marketing system. If the traditional leadership, do they have any marketing system to that they need to be implemented in different areas? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Kitadi Medisale Marena Arena. Chair, I think you are a great philosopher. Yes. Because when you speak, I listen very, very attentively, and you flow very well for me, because what you are saying is exactly what is happening, and you know how to deal with it, and you clearly unpack it. I like when you unpack the economic development in the rural areas, in the, sorry, then I give Sabata rural, yes, in the villages. And I wish this can be shared with the economic development, because I don't think they are looking at it. And they may be wondering how will they start this whole South Africa by ensuring that everyone is surviving. I think you are the remedy. You have the remedy, and you are the one who can actually, they must invite you so that you can actually induct them or teach them on how to transform the lives of the people of South Africa. Chair, as we are speaking, I also remembered where I'm coming from, because I remember where I'm coming from. I'm coming from Midvale, which is a place in the Vaal, and there is a place there in one of the villages called Makoko. The people named it themselves. There's no way that there can be Makoko under Midvale, which is unfortunately not an African municipality. But people named it because they are actually making their own, you know, people bring the slaughtered skin, you know, the sheep skin that was slaughtered. They bring it there, and these people are there to clear the, and clean this skin to be white. And then they start manufacturing different things. So it's another area that you can explore, including cow skin and other skins. That can also be very good business, because as African people, we really like to have our own cattle and sheep. Chair, you know, there's also a Khosikapa Kimufumahati or Rapelampula. I think that will be very much interesting for the international people to see how we South Africans or Africans pray for the rain to come, and that will be very much interesting for them, because we have the queen, the rain of the god, the queen of the rain, Khosi wa mapula wa pula mujaji e kuri hanseri spreader. This whole thing, you find that it is very, very much interesting. And our supermetrics philosopher actually unpacked it so nice. Chair, our government must also begin to start, begin to take our villages seriously in terms of service delivery. If you want to bring tourism or make it effectively, issues such as water in villages, which is a very, very a problem in terms of shortages of water, sanitation is still a challenge. I think Wi-Fi is still a challenge. Okay, we do have clinics though. In some areas, they are being replaced by mobile clinics, EMS. Those are the things that actually hinder the effectiveness of tourism in our areas. So I think we need to speak to COCTA, Minister, to say, please help us with our villages so that our villages have such services. Chair, I like touring a lot. I once went to Fiji Islands, where there are more than 100 small islands, Malamala Islands. there, when you get there, they give you a kava. Kava is a drink. To us, we call it mqombothi. To welcome you. Thank you. I went to Kenya, they welcome you with that. I went to Accra, they welcome you with that. Where do we get that here in South Africa? Where do we get that? How do we welcome our people as South Africans? So I feel we also, our villages will be doing that, that thing that is really having no one to do, but villages will do it for us. We have traditional healers, Chair, who are also playing a very important role in our lives as Africans. Some of them who believe that they get healing and others get miracles. So I think they will also be interested as tourists to find those traditional healers in our villages. And they are mostly there. I think the CEO mentioned the issue of tour operators, or is it Moran? Yes. It is important, Chair, that we get also our tourism authorities inducting and training also the tour operators and the tour guides who will be actually also inducted by Marena to say this is how, you know, it will be tour guides, Marena, tourism authority, so that they accredit them and give them the right to do tourism in those villages where they belong, but they must also be inducted and be taught by Marena to say this is how, because they are young, this is how we live as Africans, and this is how you relate our history to our tourists. And also, Chair, I think our tourists, when I talk about tour operators, I'm now referring to transportation of the tourists, because there's the difference between tour guides and tour operators. The tour operators, I think, must also go back to where we are coming from. Remember, Nakimusutu, Haisu Kwanakikala Bere as my mode of transport. And now, do we do that here in our villages? We do have the donkey and carts. Likwana inland, they do get those carts and chariots. Eh, but the bizarre chariots gas hoa. Eh, the palangwa ki di hula ki di bear. Horses are pulling chariots. That is our culture, which was copied. It was copied and they made it their own culture. And today we are told that we cannot, we are demarcated, you cannot drive this cart, horse cart there, but you can drive it there. You can drive your horses there and your donkeys there. They will enjoy our travel, transport mode from village to village if we have to transport them within our villages. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues in welcoming your input, Chair, but also welcome our leaders, traditional leaders. I cannot agree more, Chair, with your input that the sector has been monopolized for a very long time. Indeed, in our last meeting, I expressed my discomfort on our slow pace when we deal with transformation. For instance, it was about the tour guides. But then the answer, Chair, was tour guide is a voluntary, and I was a bit perturbed with that answer, though I didn't say anything, because I believe that we've got a mandate
remember, we were not part of this. So you can't tell me about a process that is voluntary, and yet there's nothing that we can we were doing to influence that process, to make sure that at least we conscientize our communities to understand what is this tour guide all about, so as to enforce or encourage transformation in the tourism sector. It is my strong view, Chair, that tourism is one amongst many vehicles to transform our country. And I like the fact that, Chair, you said, you mentioned that the imbalances of the past were man-made. Were man-made to make sure that you keep the status quo of divide and rule. Hence, my leaders, I would honestly plead with all my your respect that we cannot just give up. This was a man-made, you know, deliberate approach to keep us divided. And even the laws, there are some laws that still refer you to 1974. And indeed, as leaders, you see the approach of Chair is not an approach of complaining. At this level, we are at a higher level whereby we are expected to provide leadership. As the committee, we are expected to provide, you know, to change the status quo. We are the sixth administration. If we believe things are still, going the old way, we are the ones that must provide leadership. We must make sure that we don't complain. To whom are we complaining to? As leaders, we can't keep on complaining. As members of the committee, we must provide solutions, as the chair is trying to lead by example. Every meeting that he started, when he concludes that meeting, he would give us 10, 17, 13, 14 points to say, this is what must happen. Not to say, can this not happen? This is what must happen. And I think if, because this is our first year, and I mean, the time flies. So the sooner we realize that we've got no one to complain to, we are the ones that must provide leadership as this committee, the sooner, so that we can now start changing. Even tourism sector will understand that this thing of, you know, members keep on lamenting, kind of complaining, no, government must do this. Whose government? Whose government? We are in charge. We are the government. So we must start taking, you know, a full responsibility and take the bull by its horns so that we can drive, you know, this tourism sector to the direction that we want. So, Chair, I think that's actually the comment that I wanted to make, but I think we are very happy that our leaders are committing to work with us so that moving forward, at least there is surely this process of Section 25 is one process that is going to shake us a bit, all of us, but if we move together and we know exactly where we want to go, or what we want to achieve, there would be no challenges. At least there must be a common understanding amongst ourselves. Thanks very much. Because the last one, Chair, it does concern, though, that you can listen to state of the provincial addresses across the country, sometimes state of the national address. Now, coming from a small dorpy, called Riebeek East, again, Chair, named after Jan van Riebeek, you see, the four trackers. Now, coming from that area, there's nothing that is known or is mentioned about where I come from. And if I'm actually matured enough, I must be worried as a member of parliament representing those communities, sitting here listening to the state of the nation, state of the province, but nothing is mentioned about where I come from. We must be worried. Thanks very much, sir.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Soro Khosi and the CEO, Honorable Khalipa. Honorable Khalipa is from the ANC. Utaha Mane Freistad, Province of Freistad. Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, and welcome to your report and the presentation from Khosi and the CEO. Chair, when we started in this, we're appointed to be part of this committee. There are things which is we agreed that they are going to be a priority on tourism. Village and the small towns. We're in that process of implementing our mandate, and we are happy, Chair, that there is this type of interaction with the leadership. And also the invitation that our chairperson must go and address the House. What I would also suggest, Chair, that both the Minister of Tourism and the Chair must be in the same meeting. Because if both the Chair and the Minister, they are in the same meeting, then the issues of tourism will then be part of the top agenda in the House and also in the committee. I will also suggest, Chair, that there must also be a roadshow of interacting with the Executive Council, so the true premiers in all provinces. Because if we want to implement all these good ideas, they are not going to fly, Chair, if they are not supported by provincial government and they are not supported by also SALGA. It's important that both the chairperson and the minister must also interact and the leadership of the House with the organized local government, which is will be your SALGA, to have a joint meeting, because part of us, we have a huge experience, Chair, in local government. But tourism is not a priority, it's not even budgeted. We always talk about, I was making one example of my own municipality in Machabeng. For the past 3 years, they did not have a director of local economic development, which is part of that sector, is also dealing with your tourism. So it's clear that tourism, we can come with all these good ideas at this level, but the level of implementation is in the executive, both in national and also in provinces and also local government. So it's important that all these ideas, Chair, both yourself and the minister, you must interact with all those structures. Also, the Department of Public Works and is also important, Chair, and the Department of Transport, Minister Mbalula. The CEO, when he was making this presentation, was making a presentation before this meeting of the committee.
indicated that people who are directing tourism, when they're supposed to go to rulers, there will be a challenge of roads. There will be a challenge that that area is too is far. Therefore, tourists, they don't have time. But we must also focus on domestic tourism, because it's what we have been undermining. We always focus on the international tourism. We are not focusing on the domestic tourism chain. The first president of the Republic, President Nelson Mandela, is original from the ruler. The second president, President Mbeki, is from the ruler. President Zuma is in Asia. President Ramaphosa is in Asia. So there is no president that is not from this group. You are from the ruler. Yes, I'm from the Free State, but I'm original from the Eastern Cape in a rural that called town Kufuvabo, and the rural that called Mabwala. It's a ruler. So, I'm sure 80% of us sitting in this committee, we are from a rural community. Therefore, we know we have an experience of a ruler. It's not, we are not just talking in silos, Chair, we know. So, I think I will agree with Honorable Peter that the time has arrived that we must implement, and we hope the budget speech of the minister will talk to these issues. Because when we came, joined this portfolio committee, already the term was ending in terms of the budget. And we agreed that the budget that is going to be presented for 2020 to 2021, in the next 3 years, must talk to all these issues. And if, Honorable Chair, the budget that is going to be presented in the House is not talking to these issues, then there will be challenges. Because you can make good speech, but if he is not talking to budget, we use speech, then you must put a budget. You're now talking. But if there is no budget, we will keep talking in this committee, Chairperson. And I hope we will be making follow-up on our minister even before she makes that presentation, Chairperson, to the House. If we can also interact with the minister whether some of the issues which we raised as part of our strategy, whether they are integrated to the budget speech of the minister. Thank you very much. So,
thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to all our guests. I think I agree with the sentiments that I think it was Honorable De Vries to speak about local governments not taking tourism seriously, because that's going to be the interaction that even any of our traditional leadership at a local level is going to immediately receive. And I mean, I was in the KZN legislature in the previous term, and I think that there's a general agreement across the board, right, across all political parties and even in society, even if you listen to when people commentate, that traditional leaderships, monarchs, etc., have some kind of a role to play together with governments in a cooperative role in order to increase tourism, because they are able to sell a very special or unique sentiment of South Africa. And it's something... And without getting into the other matters around the relationship of government and traditional leadership, with regards to funding structures of governments and traditional leadership. Without getting into that discussion, I think everybody generally agrees that there are benefits that we can receive from tourism which leverage off traditional leadership and the monarchs that we must be able to use and that we are not using. So in KZN, where you've got the Zulu monarch, which is known across the world, the question is that are international tourists, there's domestic tourists as well, do they come to KZN? Are they visiting palaces and a small museum that speaks to the monarch all the time? There may be some of those facilities, but are they enough, for instance? Because this is quite, I think it's probably amongst the richest, these are amongst the richest historical things that you can find in our country. And you can find them all across the country then. And there needs to be a way in which you actually formalize that kind of discussion and arrangement. So it can't be something where we speak about it generally as and when we go and people commentate on it. You've got to formalize that actual kind of structure to say that, how exactly do we do that, right? And so that means that even at local governments level, when they engage with traditional leadership, it is a standard thing on the table. How are we doing that, or how are we improving that? Because that's a value that we just have. If you go to, and I know people love to compare, they love to compare the UK, the monarch in the UK. But, you know, there's certain benefits or features that you can have, and I think that we can do that as well in the country. Another thing, and Chairperson, we once touched on this. You go to a place such as, I've never been there, well, I've been there once when I was too young to remember, Sun City. So now at Sun City, you've got an established tourist attraction, not only for domestic, but also internationally. And then you've got communities around them in particular. So the question is that, in that formalized structure that I said that you actually need to formalize the way in which you leverage these things, how is between local government, National Department of Tourism, and such an established structure, how are we leveraging, including those so-called communities around them? Because I think that we accept that government's capacity, we understand, is often very limited. So even if we agree on certain policy, you can agree on certain policy, we say we're going to implement it, by tomorrow there's no implementation because capacity is very low. So you've got to leverage on people who actually can do things for them to be able to do it themselves. It's the argument of government facilitating private interaction. But we need to take a look at some of those massive establishments, because you don't have to, for instance, at times even market. So if you're going to talk about Google, I want to go to Sun City now. I'm going to Google places to stay. Maybe I'll stay at Sun City, but maybe I can't afford because maybe it's peak season or whatnot. You can actually have establishments which pop up around there. So you don't have to market them because the marketing is already there, the demand is already there. But it's leveraging off necessarily that formalized structure. And I don't know how, and that's the role I think that a local government plays. South African Tourism or the National Department of Tourism is not going to be able to force implement. I mean, we can talk about finance, we can talk about all those things, but they're not going to be able to create necessarily the space around those kind of structures. That has to come from a local government level. And that's why I'm saying that you actually have to formalize that kind of engagement between those communities, traditional leadership, and actually your local municipality. Because at the end of the day, it actually goes to the idea of inclusivity. So it goes to the idea that the most inclusive societies prosper just by naturally because they're inclusive. And I take a place such as, I want to go to Ugu in KZN. Ugu in KZN is hit by a failure of the inability of the district municipality to supply water. Now Ugu is only, on the south coast, is only run based off tourism. So you cannot provide water. So then you go through a peak season where they have to cancel all their bookings because people cannot provide water. At the same time, you cannot provide electricity because we are all in this crisis problem of electricity. So then they have their own challenges around that.
So now they're hit with these multiple failures of governments. But when you find that they fight an instance of water, the way in which the community fights is becomes quite separated. So you have your established business fighting the municipality, and then because government and the economy is failing and stuff, you find that you know people play the blame game. So it's just business or so, and then you see the community fighting on its own, right? Which is a problem because it's all actually a shared interest. But obviously, if you get those levels of inclusivity, what you'll find is that it all becomes about economics and money, and they'll all fight it necessarily together, because that doesn't help that doesn't help in any way, because the fact of the matter is the district has to just deliver water, and so their failure to do that doesn't just hurt people who are in a rural community or rural setting who are on the outskirts, but who don't have the power to take on necessarily the council. But it gives legitimacy to those even in business who are fighting it, who are saying that, no, it's not about just hurting us or about just naming us and calling us abelungu or trying to put us on the side. It actually is about saying that they're a business, they're employing people, and there's a net benefit that, and they can never grow ultimately without that. So I just think that to get to the core crux, there has to be a way in which you formalize very distinctly that question around the tourism benefit and inclusivity. It's not even about saying that we want to take something that you have. It's about saying that there are assets, whether it's the monarch, whether it is an established tourism setting, where you can build onto it. So you've got to look after what you have, and then you've got to build onto it, and you've obviously got to make sure government failures are addressed.
Okay. Jose, you want to do your closing remarks? Parting shot.
Yes. Last Ilo, actually, time is a problem. So we will be short. Okay. I think one thing I forgot to speak to. The issue of art.
Yep.
Art has become a very expensive thing. I mean, but naturally, as African people, we are artists. We, yeah. we do paintings. We do all sorts of things. And from a tourism perspective, it can bring in a lot of money if we can start going back to those kind of things we did in all sorts of arts that we can do. So. We also need to look into art as a way of leveraging tourism. In terms of the relationship with councillors, I think my honourable committee member, you know, there's a problem between us and councillors. During your tenure, you did very much in our province to try and address that, so that there isn't. You know, the usual stuff that we usually hear or what we experience as traditional leaders, whereby we are now fighting for territory and whatnot. So during the Honorable Chair's tenure, everyone knew their place. There were no issues. Maybe if we can try and elevate that at the national level, it would help improve the relationship. And sometimes we worry as traditional leaders, particularly on the governing party, because, you know, as you have been saying, all those presidents are from a rural setting. Many of the leaders of the governing party are from royal families. We contributed a lot to that. Now, I think there's a lack of political education at the local level. We are fighting unnecessarily, so it needs to be addressed on a different platform, because it's important that we work together, as the other member has been saying. The issue of name change, I think it needs to be a collaborative effort between all affected parties. We need to prioritize it so that many of these names must go. I mean, we must not beat around the bush. Many of these, Rebecca Town, Harry Smith, all of these things, names that, and you see, with the likes of Harry Smith and it's people who were oppressing us, and we are still keeping to these names. There's absolutely no need to keep these names. They must go. So we need to start working on that. And also the issue of poverty and unemployment. Those things are man-made. And in order for us to change that, we cannot be conformists. We need to do things differently and drastically. We cannot expect to change things whereas we are just being nice all the time and trying to fit in. We have to be radically different or take a radically different approach to what is currently the status quo. So in the interest of time, Mdula Stilo and the committee, we are very happy. Can we keep talking, but more importantly, can we try and implement whatever it is that we are able to implement in the shortest period of time, because we are on a political environment, things change very quickly. You know, you are a premier today, tomorrow you are not a premier. You are president today, tomorrow you are not a president, for whatever reason. So, you know, we would like things to especially because we are sitting with a very progressive portfolio committee. You know, we have lost in the province, but we are fortunate as traditional leaders because the chairperson is here. So we would like to use that as soon as possible so that, because 24 hours is too long in politics, we must start doing things as quickly as possible. Thank you very much. Yeah, lastly, Chairperson, we'll submit a formal presentation and all of that maybe in the next week or so. Thanks a lot.
The points of way forward are 12. They arise from the discussions we have been having between ourselves and yourselves. What we will do is to synthesize them and send particularly practicalities around how we make local government take everything that we have discussed here serious. So they are 12. I wouldn't want to take much of your time because SAA flights are only two from Cape Town to Johannesburg. So we want to thank you very much, Khosi Aruna, Releboga Thata, Ntatestall, Modimo a tsamaye le lona, re sireletse mo dikakanyong tsotlhe tsa rona, re kgone go di fitlhelela mo rolong. Re goge mmogo. Thank you very much. Apulai. Honorable members, those points, one is on local government. I think from an implementation point of view, we will have to convene a meeting led by SALGA, and they must bring all the municipalities in the country, MMCs, executives who are responsible for matters of economy with particular focus on tourism, so that they can understand our perspective, and they must start to include that then in their budgets and their organograms and everything, as you were saying, that we must formalize it in the Tegumbi. Secondly, is that working with traditional leaders, we will have to practically say, how are we going to use tourism to promote social cohesion and building non-racialism and non-sexism? Three, is working on engaging them to change the terminology. So we'll have to, together with them, get anthropologists and other people who are experts to change the terminology from traditional leadership to people's indigenous leadership. Four, is on Chapter 9 institutions, look at areas that can be changed, areas that can be strengthened with regard to powers and functions as stipulated in the Constitution. We are lawmakers. So if we think that is needs to be done, simple. We can do it. We just need our researchers to work with us, look at these things, work with the traditional leadership, the House, and identify those areas and table them and move. Five is from a budgeting perspective, starting working on direct allocations for the strengthening of efficiency administration of traditional institutions on the ground. Six is existing tourism establishments to be closely linked or extended to potential in villages to create tourism and grow economies there. As you were saying, Honorable Kumbi, make an example of Sun City, saying that around Sun City, if there are lodges and guest houses, just from a marketing point of view, when you Google Sun City, you must find them because Sun City must agree to put them on their platform. And so, seven, is engaging tour operators with them extending their movements and marketing and everything to villages and townships. So it means we'll have to look to all the tour operators in the country and say, what are their routes, where do they end? And say, how does each one of them now extend to the villages and the townships? Eight, introduction of village, township, and small door peace-based tourism guides. Remember last week we dealt with the issue of tourism guides and so on. So we'll have to work on that. Nine is on village development plans. You have an NDP, National Development Plan. So if there is a village development plan in line with the National Development Plan, then it must have immediate, short, medium, long term. Even architects must be able to say, this is how this village will look like in the next 15, 20, 30 years, in a map. So when you look at it, you must say, Matatia, in the next 20 years, this is how it will look like. So that from one generation to another, we do that, and those who come in don't necessarily change their plan drastically. So working with the traditional leaders, they'll have to lobby from their side and lobby from this side on the plans. 10 is on village profiles. It means after getting the names of these villages, we need to do thorough profiling for tourism by doing the comprehensive profile of that village. It's huge work. If I was not in this committee, I would do it as a consultant. So it's massive work just to profile every village. I mean, in my province alone, villages are 878. It means each one of them must have a booklet. Now, it means that information must then be uploaded onto Google for Google Maps. And it's huge. It's massive work that will have to be done, right? Ignited by tourism. So we'll have to do that. 11 is the key issues, so we must write to them, the traditional leadership, key issues that they think must reflect in the budget of tourism as they relate to villages, so that we can say, Minister, it's not from us. The villagers, led by traditional leaders, they say this is what they will want you to say in as far as their villages are concerned and your budget. They will want you mentioning by name some of the areas and requesting your colleagues to mention by name, Honorable Peter. They must mention by name and say, in this village, this is what we are going to be doing, so that people can relate. Then the last one is on geographic names change. We'll have to collaborate with the relevant committee. I think it's in arts and culture.
Yes.
Which means through the traditional leaders, they must start the process of giving us the names. They know the names that were dealt away with through colonialism and apartheid. They know those names so that they are brought back. If there are other new names which are brought in as part of the new South Africa, they are agreed to, and we start changing Harry Smith to be what it was. So we must just say, what is this place, what was it called before Harry came here? Exactly. And then we just undo what Harry did. We just go back to the original names. Even the rivers' names are changed. Yes. Kalfontein. Moirefir. You find that it was not called Moirefir. Exactly. It was called something else. Because our people had a relationship with rivers and mountains. Right. Now, come, honorable members. that's the way forward, which I think we agree to. We will also bring to our leadership here that we are going to be establishing village people's tourism forums, township people's tourism forum, small door peace people tourism forum. That's all a door for thing. And so those forums are the ones that will help us to push some of the issues that we want to pursue. So that is how we come to the end of item number one. Item number two is a committee, or we have dealt with this, draft committee program. This morning we had a meeting, management committee. Our suggestion is that in the program that we have, we must just add the following new things. One, we need to insert those meetings that we said we will have with our counterparts from provinces quarterly. So we'll add those meetings. Two, we will then have to add our new approach to doing oversight. That's going one by one as part of Letofo approach to the provinces. Because when we calculated this morning, on average we will do in a year two oversights, if we maintain the status quo. It means we'll go out twice a year. In 5 years, the first year is gone already. We're left with four, so it will go out eight times. That's eight. Yeah, if you look at those who came before us here, you count, that's exactly what they have done. In a year, one or two. So in 5 years, they have done not more than 10 throughout the country. Right? So the Letofo approach will help us. In addition to the Letofo approach, we are going to approach the ICT people of the legislature, of parliament, to develop a platform like an app, Tourism Committee Oversight App. Right? Where people, when you get into that app, you can say anything that you want to say about tourism and send it to us anytime, wherever you are in the world. Then our administration will process those issues. Those that need the referral, they'll refer them. And then they will come to the committee here when we meet and we say the total number of issues is 15,000, refer to the following departments, turnaround time is 14 to 21 days. Feedback to those people through the same app, answering them, so that we don't wait to go to these villages and townships, and people can communicate with us. So that's part of the fourth industrial revolution from a tourism perspective. So it's massive work that we'll have to do, and so on. So if it means we grow incrementally, we will do that. That's what we think we need to add. We are also going to add our meeting with Nelson Mandela, Robben Island board that meeting is likely to take place at Robben Island. 99% of the arrangement is that it must be at Robben Island, where we meet with the board, deal with the tourism thing there, and discuss with them there. The other thing we want to add is a meeting with Brent SA. Brent SA have requested a meeting with us, so we'll add it in the program. If there are any other thing that I'm leaving the experts around the chair, the doctor, and the administrator here, Mr. Boltino, you can just add to that. Dr. Boltino.
Thanks, Chairperson. The other thing that we think members must be aware, that meeting of the committee, when we come back, members, in the next quarter, we are likely to have a joint meeting with the select committee of the NCOP when the department comes here to make a briefing on the strat plan and the budget. We've also given them our dates as a portfolio committee. That department will be here on the 14th of April. Then the SAT will be here again on the 21st of April. We have extended that, and it looks as if even Parliament also wants that to be the same. Those joint briefings that the committee initiated, that they must be practicalized now. So we've shared our dates with them, so they were going to take those dates because their committee is constituted by a number of departments, labor, economic development, trade and industry, and so on. So they will look into those data and make a decision as a select committee. Then the other thing, Chair, that I think you left, it's also a proposal from our side where we want to develop the strategic plan of the portfolio committee for the next term of this committee, meaning from now up to 2024, honorable members. We want to have that plan. I think those are some of the issues, Chair.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I thought that will get into under correspondence, Chair. Is reminding me about the
yes,
Board of Airlines.
Honorable members, any comment on the program? By and large, it remains the same. Those are the little additions. Kumba Peters?
Chair, it's not an addition as such, but it's a concern that what we are doing is a very good job that is not seen or known by people out there, because our committee is not covered on the television and people watch television. And I think it is important that our media team in this committee must ensure that we are also covered like other committees who are covered by media and television. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. In our planning, Chair, I just want to lift maybe the issue of finding time within the 5 years to visit the Nelson Mandela Museum in Kunu. We should maybe consider that and see how best we can, you know, what is it that we can do. We try to make sure that that museum is live. And I think the last one, Chair, I'm not sure about the approach to develop a strat plan for the for tourism, whether we never had such a plan in place, so that if we do have, instead of saying let's we want to develop a strat plan, we should rather say let that strat plan be workshopped to the committee, and probably find a way of making our own additions in terms of our new way of doing things to be incorporated in that plan. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just thinking because the members I'm following is talking about the Eastern Cape. So I was just thinking if one day we can visit Sandton in Washington, Natal. And then the other one, Chairperson, is the overseas trips.
Yeah. Doctor? Stroble? Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, honourable members. We intend to have at least a 2 days strat plan. We have a previous 5-year strat plan, and we're developing the annual plans each year. So that's what we'll do. So when we meet for those, we're proposing because you just said on the 21st, because the week of the 14th to the 24th. Has been blocked by Parliament for stress plan and APPs and budgets for the departments. So the following week thereof will be the 21st to the 24th. So on the 21st, we will be meeting SAT. So immediately after the meeting with the SAT, we will then jet off to wherever we will be having, because we are thinking it must be outside Parliament so that we can have your full attention, members, for the entire 2 days, because it's a very important process. So the first part of the strat plan, we will be like inviting outside stakeholders. We're thinking like your Tourism Business Council of South Africa and others that will contribute to your committee's work for the next 5 years. So people that we're still going to discuss with the chairperson as to who then we'll invite. So that will be like a workshop type first day, so that you broaden your horizon in terms of the issues that you need to know. Then on the second day, then we will then, so as the meeting will be happening, so as your support staff, we'll be capturing everything that we think needs to go to the document, so that on the second day, as the Honourable Member, we just now look at your plan in terms of your new philosophy of so that when we get out of that meeting, you have a draft plan. So the second day will just be the committee's exclusive meeting where we look at what would have developed as your support staff in terms of everything that you have said from the day one in this committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I hope that takes care of what is going to happen. The honourable members, we've got. You remember in the last meeting there was a matter arising from the letter communicated to the chair by honourable De Freitas regarding the visit we undertook to Hawick. So we, in line with the response, we have got the feedback now from the speaker. I will not go through the letter, but the speaker, Honourable Mutise, based on the resolutions of the House, which came from a report, has now written to the Minister of Tourism, and those issues, as indicated there, from A up to C, have been sent to the Minister for a response by not later than 31st March 2020. So that's the matter we dealt with in the last meeting. So that's the first correspondence. The second one is from the Board of Airline Representatives of South Africa, BASA. BASA, we're supposed to meet with them. Unfortunately, the CEO is going overseas. And linked to that, the CEO will be exiting from that particular position. So their request is that the new incumbent should be the one who will be interacting with us around April. So that's why we have that date now allocated it possibly to Brand SA. Yeah? Brand SA. So that BARSA, B-A-R-S-A. This one is covered by the programs, yeah, strategic plans and annual performance plans for 2020. So that one is covered by that. This thing of parliamentary channel, I told myself that I will observe it until the end of the financial year and be scientific with it and take all the committees that have been covered in that parliamentary channel and the ones that have not been covered. We are one of the committees that never appears on the parliamentary channel. There are others that appear more than 7-8 times. So I take your point, Honorable Member. So I don't think it's the fault of our media people in the committee. I think it comes from somewhere. There's particular issues that we need to deal with outside the committee, which are more political. So we will wait for March to end. That's the end of the financial year. So the new financial year is next month. So it's not far. We will then bring to this committee the number of times other committees appeared on the parliamentary channel, the number of times tourism has not appeared on the parliamentary channel. We'll then ask, which criteria do we use to arrive at the decision for committees to appear on the parliamentary channel? Who is responsible for finally deciding who and how and where do they appear on the parliamentary channel? So we'll get there. 3 weeks to go. We'll get there. It's not far. So that's fine. Now, Honorable Members, breaking news is that the SAE has just released the fourth quarter report. That's 2019 quarter report on the growth of the South African economy. So unfortunately, the economy has declined by 0.2%, which means South Africa is in a technical economic recession. Right? According to economics, if you don't grow in successive quarters, you get into technical, then recession. Yeah, so that's where we are as a country. Now, that's why you need all those things we spoke about earlier to get the economy right, classrooms, the goods and services, right? So I just thought we need to do that. So we must say tourism, how does it come into the picture to rescue the economy which is in the mud? But I want to take this opportunity to say to the progressive honorable members of the Portfolio Committee of Tourism, and thank you for your contributions, your incisiveness, your alertness, your commitment to the work of the committee, and the respect we showed to the leadership of our people in the villages here, and we must also thank the department for always being with us, Mevrou van Niekerk. Always thank the department for being with us, and our sister there who deals with the media, always alert. You know, she does many things behind the scenes. Many things. She breaks barriers. She does. I'll say one day when I'm in a good mood, I will tell you what she does. But she does marvelous, excellent, progressive work for the committee. Otherwise, thank you very much, honorable members. Enjoy your lunch and your sitting that is going to end at 9 to 9.